Okay, welcome back to another episode of 2S, the Horror Quarters podcast. This is another Ghosts of LA edition, and we're going to be covering the Ungenfield murder, which culminated and began in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, near the Florentine Gardens. Carlos Avenue and Gower, particularly, was where the incident occurred, and it is now named after Ian Campbell, the officer who lost his life in Bakersfield. But it all started on March 9th, 1963, approximately 10 p.m. So officers Ian Campbell and Carl Hettinger were in their unmarked Plymouth 6Z4 plainclothes unit vehicle, and they were patrolling in the area of Carlos Avenue and Gower, particularly in an alley. At this point, they were coming down an alley onto Carlos Avenue. Now, looking at Carlos Avenue now from Google Earth, or even if you go to Carlos Avenue, you can see there is alleyways on each side of the street, one on the north side of Carlos, one on the south side of Carlos. The book didn't specify which alley the officers were heading down as they approached Carlos. I'm going to guess they were heading southbound towards Carlos from that alley. And that is what the movie shows, if I saw that right. So as they approached Carlos from that alley, right around the same time, there were two criminals in a 1946 maroon Ford coupe. A guy by the name of Gregory Powell was driving, and the other guy was named Jimmy Lee Smith in the passenger seat. Now, as the Ford coupe headed westbound on Carlos, it approached a street called Vista Del Mar, and for whatever reason, the driver, Powell, thought that the street dead-ended. So he makes a U-turn on Carlos to head back eastbound towards Gower. And that's where the two officers spotted him, and they looked out of place. The plates were out-of-state plates, and the two men inside of the vehicle were wearing black coats with black snap hats. Just looked out of place, especially that time of night, cruising the way they were. So Campbell got behind the coupe and, looking for a reason to pull them over, they noticed that the light was out on the license plate area. They pulled him over as they made a right onto Gower. And you can see the southwest corner of Gower heading southbound is where they pulled him over at. Officer Campbell gets out of the vehicle on the driver's side, Officer Hettinger on the passenger side. Jimmy Lee Smith on the passenger side of the coupe gets out and puts his hands up without being told to do so. Now, both officers only had their flashlights in their hands. No weapons were drawn at this point. So as Hettinger approaches Jimmy Smith is like, hey, what's the problem? And then on the other side, in the street side of the cars, Officer Campbell approaches Gregory Powell and asks him to see his license. So Powell, noticing that Campbell only had a flashlight on him, turns to his right and backs out of the car. And in doing so, he grabs his weapon, turns it, and has the gun pointed at Ian Campbell. He gets behind Officer Campbell and now has the gun in his back. Now they come around the vehicle onto the sidewalk area, and this is where Officer Hettinger notices that something's not right here. Officer Campbell is in front of the suspect, not behind him, and it was a surreal moment. Now, as Officer Campbell confirms to Officer Hettinger that there is a gun in his back, Powell yells to Smith to get Hettinger's weapon. And it was at this point that Officer Campbell told Officer Hettinger to give up your gun. So now Powell and Smith had all four guns in their possession, and they were directed to get into the vehicle. Officer Hettinger was forced to go in the back on the floor behind the driver's seat and keep his hands as high as he can, or enough where they can be seen at all times. He was crouched and cramped, very uncomfortable in the back seat. In the front seat, Powell had Officer Campbell get behind the wheel. Powell then sat in the middle with a gun pointed in Campbell's stomach. Next to Powell sat Jimmy Lee Smith. Jimmy Lee Smith's task was to watch Officer Hettinger in the back for the whole ride up. So before they took off, Powell told Jimmy Smith to get out, go move the police car up a little closer to the curb so it doesn't look as conspicuous. Jimmy Smith goes to the car but can't figure out how to move it and comes back to the coop and gets in and tells Powell he couldn't figure it out. Now, both officers had Model 14s, 6-inch barrel Smith & Wessons. Once Smith got back into the vehicle, Powell asked Officer Campbell, does he know how to get to Bakersfield? Officer Campbell said yes. So Officer Campbell made a U-turn on Gower, headed north, made a left onto the 101 North, which probably would have been Franklin. Now here we're facing westbound on Carlos Avenue. And in the distance here is Vista Del Mar. And even now it looks like a dead end. I mean, they have a crossbar across the street now. Really, the street continues on. But just the way the street looks, it appears to be a dead end, but it is not. This apartment building back then was not here. But had they made a left here, it would have taken them to Hollywood Boulevard. So this is what it would have been like if Powell would have made a right on Vista Del Mar instead of U-turning. I don't know exactly where that leads. Because Powell thought it was a dead end, he U-turned and headed back eastbound towards Gower, and this would have been his view. Now, based on what I can see, the two alleys are pretty much right across from each other. Here's an alley here to the left, and then here's another alley to the right. In the book, it's just mentioned as an alley. The officers come out of an alley onto Carlos Avenue, just as Powell and Smith are crossing. So, based on my estimations, it would have been probably in this general area. They approach the light. Officer Campbell and Hettinger light him up, pull him over, and they make a right onto Gower and pull over onto Gower into this area here. Here we are at the intersection of Carlos Avenue and Gower Street. And this is where the abduction started. You could see here would have been where Officer Campbell and Officer Hettinger's car was parked. And right about here would have been where Powell and Jimmy Lee Smith's vehicle was parked. And we're looking westbound at this point at the southwest corner of Gower and Carlos. So I'm getting a little closer here. We just went not too long ago to the area. I wanted to get a feel for the area and get my eyes on the actual area where it happened. I definitely like to visit these locations. It gets me a better feel of what happened, at least on my take of what happened. So right about in this area here is where it all started. Jimmy Smith would have been probably right about here when he had his hands up and had the interaction with Officer Hettinger. On the other side of the vehicle, Officer Campbell and Powell had their interaction, where of course Powell got the drop on Officer Campbell and had him at gunpoint. So Ian Campbell would have made a U-turn here and headed north on Gower and passed up the First Presbyterian Church of Hollywood here and approached the nearest on-ramp, which I believe would have been Franklin. In the movie, the traffic stop was here. It was on Carlos Avenue. I don't know why that would be. If I had to guess, it would be probably because it was safer, maybe permit issues. But whatever case, the actual traffic stop scene was here, right about this area here, just before the alley. Now, at the time in 1963, the 101 North didn't get you to the Grapevine. They had to hit the 101 North, exit Sepulveda, and take that for a ways to get to the Grapevine area. They took the Grapevine up over into Bakersfield. Now, Bakersfield was an area that Jimmy Smith was familiar with, and Smith and Powell were in that area earlier that day, which we'll get into later in this episode. There wasn't much talk inside of the vehicle on the way up. Greg Powell asked the officers how much money they had. Officer Campbell said he had $10, I believe, and then Officer Hettinger had $8 or $9. And Ian mentioned to Powell that, hey, that's enough money to get those two guys to Frisco if they were to just let the officers go. But Powell wasn't falling for that, and they continued their drive on. Officer Campbell was asked why he pulled them over, and he said because of the light around the license plate. Once they got to an area called the Maricopa Turnoff, this is where they exited and headed west. They headed west for just a little bit, and on the left-hand side, head southbound, was a dirt road. They passed the dirt road, and then U-turned back to it, and then made a right, headed south into these open fields, these open onion fields at the time. Now, in the distance, though it was pretty dark out there and open and almost deserted, even though there was a lot of crops and stuff, but at that time of night, it was pretty lonely up there. But there was a farmhouse in the distance. Gregory Powell mentioned to the officers that once he drops them off, they can make their way to that farmhouse and call for help. So there was a little bit of hope there in the car at this point for the two officers. Now, heading southbound on this dirt road, they crossed a couple of roads. Now, there were some parts where the dirt there was a little choppy, a little soft, but they approached an open ditch. And what that open ditch was the gas company had dug that ditch to lay a gas pipe in, but they hadn't filled it back in yet. So the coupe couldn't continue on. So Powell ordered Officer Campbell to stop, make a U-turn, and just face north, face the way that they came down. And at one point, Powell even threatened Ian and told him, "You get this car stuck, you're both dead." Here's a shot of us looking east on Maricopa Highway. Out there in the distance, you would make a right. That would be the dirt road that Ian Campbell went down and headed southbound towards where they eventually stopped and U-turned. We're just over the area where the car stopped at. So Officer Campbell would have been driving the car southbound towards us and stopping just about where we flew over. Even today, there's a gas marker off to the right, somewhere where I'm standing there. I'll show another shot of it so you can see. And this is the area where the trench would have been and the reason why Officer Campbell had to make the U-turn and stop the vehicle. That's me walking northbound on the road in the general area of where they stopped. I mean, that was 59 years ago. I'm sure a lot of this changed, and based on what I've seen in my calculations and research, the area would have been somewhere next to this tower to the right here. Back then, these trees weren't there. Shout out to Forrest Haggerty and his channel. Forrest Haggerty has an excellent channel where he goes over cases and murders and crimes, but he does it via Google Earth, and he really lays it out for you of how things look now versus then and how the streets are then versus now. I always look at the telephone poles if they're within the vicinity, because I can tell what year they were put in. So just to check here, these particular poles were put in 1993, so these were not the original poles that were there that night. So slowly and carefully, Officer Campbell made the turn, faced the car north, and parked. Powell has Ian turn the headlights off and orders Jimmy Smith to get out of the vehicle. Now, I want to emphasize this part in the book. The Onion Field by Joseph Wamba is an incredible book. The movie's very well done, too. He wrote the screenplay for it. But I want to emphasize this quote in the book because it's an important part of the confusion that happened that night and in the looming days that followed. And the quote is, "Then a hand picked up Ian Campbell's Smith & Wesson, which was in the seat between them." And that's important, and we'll get to that a little bit later in this episode. So Powell then tells Ian to get out of the vehicle. Powell was standing between the passenger side door. Jimmy was at the rear of the vehicle. Ian steps out on the driver's side with his hands up and facing Jimmy at this point. And Ian, of course, is on the driver's side of the vehicle. So this leaves Officer Hettinger inside of the car, still cramped in the back seat. Greg Powell orders Hettinger to get out of the car. And Officer Hettinger says, "Can I use my hands, or how do you want me to do this? Just crawl over?" He said, "Yeah, crawl over." So Officer Hettinger uses his elbows to essentially crawl out of the vehicle. And this put Officer Hettinger standing there next to Officer Campbell on the driver's side of the vehicle. Carl is standing to the left of Ian. Now at the rear of the vehicle, both officers can see the silhouettes of Jimmy Lee Smith and Gregory Powell, and they can see that Powell is holding a weapon. And Powell walks over to Jimmy Smith and whispers something to him. And I don't think it was ever deciphered or figured out what it was that Powell whispered to Smith. Powell then walks over to the two officers, particularly in front of Officer Hettinger, but is looking right at Officer Campbell and asks him, "Have you ever heard of the Little Lindbergh Law?" In which Officer Campbell answers yes. Then Gregory Powell raises the gun and shoots Officer Campbell in the mouth, right above the top lip. Officer Campbell falls to the ground on his back. So at this point, Officer Hettinger is screaming in terror, and he begins to run off. And during this time that he ran off, four more shots are put into Officer Campbell, who was already on the ground. This is where there's some confusion, because neither Greg Powell or Jimmy Lee Smith admitted to shooting the four shots into Officer Campbell. Both of them blamed each other. Now, in the movie directed by Harold Becker, the way they shot that conveyed the confusion as to what happened. It was a good way that they shot that. You can see Officer Hettinger, played by John Savage, running towards camera. And James Woods, who plays Gregory Powell, is standing next to Franklin Seals, who plays Jimmy Lee Smith. And they're standing over Ian Campbell, who's played by Ted Danson. Now, in Jimmy Lee Smith's right hand is a gun, and in Gregory Powell's left hand is a gun, and both of their arms are kind of really close, overlapping each other, both pointing down to Ian Campbell, and then shots are fired. So you really can't tell who was pulling the trigger in that shot. So I thought that was done well to convey that confusion. Now, Officer Hettinger was zigzagging and running away as Gregory Powell was firing shots at him, trying to find him. Hettinger runs to the left to a barbed wire fence and leaps over it. There's barbed wire and tumbleweed. He cuts himself, rips his pants, and ends up able to hide momentarily amongst the tumbleweed and the darkness. And at this point, he's thinking, instead of running north to the highway, which is what Powell and Smith figured he would do, he ended up coming back around south, back towards Officer Campbell's body. Gregory Powell, after throwing a few more shots, runs back to the car, yells at Jimmy Smith, asking him, "What the hell's the matter with you? This guy's getting away." He grabs Hettinger's flashlight and heads back to the field there just to shine some light to see if maybe he can find Hettinger. Officer Hettinger is still lying there, hiding out. Does look at his watch, and it's 12:15 a.m. at this point. Then Greg Powell heads back to the car, gets inside, and starts to reload whatever guns were fired. He leaves the .38 with Smith, and then Powell takes the automatic and Carl's flashlight with him back on foot, back up the road, looking for Hettinger. So Jimmy Smith suggests that he takes the car, goes and looks for Hettinger, while Greg Powell is on foot, and then he'll come back around for him to pick him up. Greg Powell agrees, and Jimmy Smith takes off. Meanwhile, Officer Hettinger is headed south, then west, then north. He's kind of zigzagging in the field, just trying to lose these guys. He's tired. It's dark. He doesn't know the terrain. His partner's been killed. It's very, very chaotic. So as Officer Hettinger is racing across these fields as fast as he can, he comes across a farmhand on a tractor, what they call a cat. A man by the name of Emmanuel McFadden. Mr. McFadden helps Officer Hettinger. He allows him to get on the cat, and they take it for a little bit anyway. But once they find out it's too slow to gain any ground, they jump off of it. Because in the distance, they can see the flashlights moving, headlights moving, headed their way. So they continue on foot. And at one point, Mr. McFadden looks back to where the cat is still running. And he sees a flashlight moving next to where the tractor's parked. Emmanuel McFadden was extremely scared You know, he didn't know what the heck was going on. This guy just comes running up to him saying he's been shot at and his partner's been killed. So there was a point where Mr. McFadden separates himself from Officer Hettinger and just pretty much wants to lose him because he doesn't want any of these problems. But he changed his mind and waited for him. So now the two of them were heading towards a house at Mettler Ranch. But as they got a little closer, Emmanuel McFadden thought twice about it and said, well, whoever's chasing us can get to this house quicker than us. So maybe they're there waiting for us. So they changed direction. They continued west, keeping an eye on the lights in the distance, and they made it to a house at Opal Fry Ranch. Knocked on the door. A gentleman by the name of Jack Fry answers the door, and at the house was Mr. Fry's wife and their teenage son. Hettinger gets to go in, and that's where the call's made for help. And then a slight knock on the door is heard a few minutes later. The door is opened, and Mr. Fry has a shotgun aimed at Emmanuel McFadden. And then once they figured out who he was, Mr. McFadden was allowed to come in, and they called for help. Back to Greg Powell, who was still alone on foot. He goes back to the coop, back to Officer Campbell's body, and then rolls Officer Campbell into a ditch. And Officer Campbell landed face down, left arm up, and it seemed as if he was looking at his watch. In the movie, Powell goes back to Ian's body earlier than he did in the movie and rolls the body into the ditch. And also in the movie, the ditch wasn't in front of the car, where in the book, the ditch headed east and west, and that's what stopped the car. Jimmy Smith decided to just leave Gregory Powell in the field, desert him. He didn't want any other parts of this. And Greg Powell figured this out pretty quick. So it was about 12:40 a.m. at this point where Gregory Powell realized that Jimmy Smith wasn't coming back for him. So Powell goes and steals a car from the Riddick family. Now the Riddick family lived in a neighborhood in the Clifford Mettler Ranch area. He stole the car and headed back to the hideaway, which was the hotel they were staying at already. Now Jimmy Smith had a decision to make. He had the vehicle, but does he head back to LA, where they're probably really looking for him at this point, or does he continue up towards the Frisco area? The gas gauge was extremely low in the car Smith was in, so he pulls off in this town called Lamont in a parking area, leaves the car there and continues on foot throughout the night and ends up in a rooming house called Mom's Rooming House to spend the night. He checks in, no problem. So Greg Powell, now that he has a stolen vehicle, heads to the hideout, which was the highway motel where they were already staying, and he wants to switch cars because they have the station wagon parked there. So he gets inside his room, begins to shave his head, begins to switch cars, and then realizes that the keys to the station wagon are in his girlfriend Maxine's purse, who's in LA. So now he's frantic. So he finds a coin, I believe it was a dime, to switch plates from the station wagon that they drove up to Bakersfield with the stolen vehicle and drive out of there with the stolen vehicle and different plates. And at this time, the stolen vehicle from the Riddick household was called in, and police knew, based on the call from Officer Hettinger, what was going on, more or less. So they were on the lookout for two men in a stolen red and white Plymouth. Greg Powell was eventually pulled over by officers Christ and Odom, and they quickly found out that that wasn't his vehicle, that the plates didn't match, the registration didn't match, and they arrested him. Now Jimmy Smith, who made his way to Mom's Rooming House, checked in okay and used the community bathroom, but it wasn't within 5 to 10 minutes that he was there that police came breaking down the door and detained him. So I wanted to get into what happened just before that night, March 9th. So in regards to the 1946 maroon Ford coupe, there's somewhat of a story on how they got to get that car. Initially, it was Gregory Powell, his girlfriend Maxine, and Jimmy Smith. They drove up to Boulder City in a station wagon. Gregory Powell knew a guy out there in Boulder City that was selling a car, that particular car. And they drove up there, they bought it from him, and they left at 2 in the morning to head to San Francisco. And they stopped in Bakersfield at the Highway Motel and spent the night there. And in the middle of the night, Jimmy Smith hopped into the car and was going to take off in it, in the coupe. And Gregory Powell caught him outside, and Jimmy Smith talked his way out of it. So the initial plan was to go to Frisco and see what they can do up there, you know, what robberies they can hit, whatever they can do up there. But Greg Powell changed the plan and said, hey, Jimmy, we're going to head back down to L.A. And, you know, Jimmy Smith didn't like that plan. He didn't like the way Greg Powell was changing things. He just didn't like his whole M.O. So at first, it was Greg Powell and Maxine in the station wagon, and Jimmy Smith was driving the coupe, headed back to L.A. They switched up. They even passed the area off of Maricopa Highway that they were going to soon return to later that night. So once they got back to L.A., they dropped Maxine off and were cruising Hollywood, cruising for another liquor store to hold up or any kind of petty theft, and that's how they got caught up on Carlos Avenue. I encourage you to read the book and to watch the film. There's a lot of information, a lot of layers before and after the crimes involving Officer Ian Campbell and Officer Carl Hettinger. They have stories to them, and it puts things more in perspective. After this happened, Officer Carl Hettinger dealt with what's called PTSD and survivor's guilt. On September 4th, 1963, Jimmy Smith was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to death, which got changed to life in prison. He was eventually paroled out a few times and always made his way back to prison. He ended up dying in prison. He died at the age of 76 of a heart attack. On September 4th, 1963, Gregory Powell was convicted of kidnapping Officer Campbell and Officer Hettinger and murdering Officer Campbell. He was sentenced to death in November of that same year, but his sentence was commuted to life in prison, and he ended up dying in 2012 of prostate cancer. Officer Carl Hettinger died May 4th, 1994 of liver failure. He was cremated. Officer Ian Campbell is buried at Forest Lawn in Glendale. So definitely a very tragic killing of Officer Ian Campbell, and tragic as well as what this killing did to the life of his partner, Officer Carl Hettinger, the emotional toll it took upon him and his family. So I want to thank you all for joining me again on another true crime episode of 2S, the Horror Quarters podcast. This one here is another Ghosts of LA edition. Thanks again, and we will see you on the next one.
Okay, I wanted to bring in Dan Wells. Dan Wells has been a police officer for 22 years in the Bakersfield area. And I wanted to kind of speak to him about this case and what he had heard about it, especially coming up in that area. Dan, any kind of insight into the case when you were in the academy or anything along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I had heard about before. I knew about the Onion Field murder in the movie prior to ever going to the academy. But when I went to the academy in 2000, it is something that they bring up to us as a training tool. The incident, how it occurred, how it happened, and what better things can be done to make corrections so that something like this doesn't happen again.
Okay, so they pulled him over and they were actually on Carlos heading eastbound. That when they pulled him over, they made a right onto Gower and pulled over there on the southwest corner. And hearing about this now, you think, like, damn, this is how they approached the car. Officer Campbell, who was driving his vehicle, it was unmarked, and he got out with a flashlight. As did Hettinger. I don't know how the procedures now, how that would work. They got out with a flashlight. Officer Campbell walks up to the driver's side and talks to Gregory Powell. A couple of questions. Hey, what are you doing? On the other side is Jimmy Lee Smith. Now, Jimmy Lee Smith gets out of the vehicle on his own, which is no bueno these days, but he gets out, puts his hands up. Hey, man, we're good, Now, on the other side of the car, the driver's side of the car, Officer Campbell asked Powell to get out. And Powell, noticing that all he had was a flashlight on him, Powell turns to his right and reverses his body towards the street to get out. And in doing so, grabs his weapon, which was tucked in his coat, turns around and got it right on Officer Campbell. Turns Campbell around, puts the gun to Campbell's back, walks him over to Officer Hettinger. Nowadays, that probably wouldn't be procedure, right? With just flashlights, or am I wrong?
No, you're looking at a major difference between 1963 and 2022. Obviously, a lot of advancements in law enforcement, especially in the field of training. It's situations like this that we use for training to figure out the best tactics for approaching a vehicle, for approaching a suspect. And I said, these are the kind of things we'll talk about over. In this case, will be talked about forever in law enforcement and the mistakes that were made and how things can be done better.
Okay, was there a particular cloud that this case kind of weighs over Bakersfield? I mean, to this day?
The story weighs over Bakersfield simply because the murder actually happened up closer to here. They were brought here, so it's something that's known around here. I mean, it didn't really have much ties for Bakersfield other than the fact that they drove here,
Right.
but because it occurred closer to here, that we do hear about it.
And I know that they kind of said the same thing to Officer Hettinger when they wrote that memorandum saying, don't ever give your weapon up, and talk to roll call for us. Tell them about the mistakes you made. And I don't know that he made any mistakes. Like, again, it's not for me to pass judgment. I don't know what I would have done, but based on your experience, were there any mistakes made? What can you say about that?
Well, there were obviously mistakes made. I mean, two officers were kidnapped and one was murdered. So, yeah, there were obviously mistakes made. But it happened. It was a bad situation. As far as him giving up his gun, that training will never change. Officers will always be trained, do not give up your weapon, never give up your weapon.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's common training. That'll never change. Whether or not he should have at the time, I mean, I would only leave up to him. He
Okay.
made that decision. His partner told him to make that decision. His partner was in fear for his own life and told him to. Now, like I said, it's training never to do that, and most officers will continue to tell you that. They'll always tell you that, but until you're standing in his shoes in that situation, it's always going to be a guessing game and a judgment call.
Yeah, I mean, around that specific time too, there were three cases, I believe, all in LA, where an officer had to give his weapon up. And in all three cases, the officer and officers involved ended up okay. So at the time, maybe that was in the back of their mind, like, okay, well, we're going to be okay based on the three previous ones. Again, a gun to your partner's back and the guy's saying, hey, man, give up your weapon. I don't know what else there would be to do.
I think the most pressing issue would probably be the fact that his partner himself, who was in trouble, told him to give up his weapon. If there was anything that swayed his decision-making, I would have to say that was it.
Right. When
your partner, who is depending on you at the moment, tells you to give up your weapon, no officer or very few officers would give up their weapon in other situations. But in that situation, his partner was telling him to give it up, and his partner was the one in trouble. So he made a decision based on probably at that moment the well-being of his partner.
Now, they say it happened near Bakersfield, but I'm calling it Bakersfield because even the address there at the Opal Fry Ranch is Bakersfield. They took him up there with the intent. Mostly, this is all on Powell. I mean, obviously, it's on Smith as well, too, but Powell was the main driver in all this, you know, as far as what his plans were, you know, and his plans, even though he told the officers that he's going to let him go in the field there, his plan was to kill him, you know. He shot Officer Campbell, and Officer Hettinger took off running. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? You got two men who have all four guns.
Had Hettinger not ran, he'd have been dead too. I mean, that was the intention of going to kill him right there. He ran. It was already too late for his partner. He ran. He survived. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to second guess him on that either. I've never been in that situation, but he did what he had to do, and he got out of there, and he survived, and he's very lucky he did.
And we spoke about this a little earlier. You know, it happened on a Saturday night. Officer Hettinger went back to work Monday. That wouldn't happen now, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Incident like this happened, I would say probably lucky if he ever went back to work, but he would definitely be off for a while.
Yeah.
Getting over this situation or coming to grips with what happened.
Yeah, he dealt with a lot of PTSD and survivor's guilt over the years.
Yeah, 1963, PTSD wasn't something they worried about too much. You got in a shooting, you got involved in an incident, you went right back to work.
Precisely. Yeah. And, it drove him into a depression. He started to shoplift blatantly just in front of people. And the idea behind that, at least the thought process that I've read, is his guilt. He just wanted to be caught for something, you know. And it was traumatic what happened to him, but he kind of recouped. He became a gardener. And after that, he ended up getting elected for Kern County Supervisor. Mm-hmm. Went to politics and unfortunately passed away in 1994. But to me, they're both American heroes, considering what they went through that night. And I wanted to bring you in just because, you know, you're up there, you work up there, you went there for me and checked out the layout of the land, which I appreciate too.
Oh, no problem. I'd love to be involved in anything like this. I mean, it's a bad situation. Nobody wants to relive it, but.
Right.
Something to happen, and like I said, we'll talk about it. Law enforcement will talk about this forever just because of the training aspects of it.
Okay. Well, hey, Dan, I appreciate the time, brother.
Thank you, Mike.
And we'll chat soon, all right?
All right. Have a good one.